Okay, today is December 21st, 2015. I understand today is the shortest day of the year as far as sunlight goes. So, Baruch Hashem, we're alive and kicking. I want to say hello to the wonderful students in front of me and to the many listening. I also thank, I received a number of compliments on yesterday's Shayua, so I want to tell you, the Rav taught us how to teach. In other words, you take a difficult topic, and the Rav had a way of making it simple. Am I right, Yitzchak? Do you remember what the Rav could do? And now you'll see next week when I deal with the actual tshuva to Dani, it will flow very, very easily. But now we're in a different world. But first of all, before I go any further, I have to do round three with my dear Talmid Yomo. As you recall, yesterday I woke him up and I told him, you sleep at night and you learn by day. He threw at me the Rambam, which I'm familiar with, the Hilchot Talmud Torah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Yud Gimel, Afal Pi Shemitzvah Lumod Bayom Uvalayla, Ein Adam Lomeid Rov Chachmato Ela Balayla. And Lefikach Misha Yetzel is called Peketa HaTorah Yizacher V'chol Leilotav. V'lo yabed afilu achat mehem b'sheine v'achil v'shtir v'sicha ki yotzebo ele b'tam v'torah v'divrei chachman. The Rambam goes on. It's a beautiful Rambam. I don't have time to elaborate. Now I gave shirim on this Rambam many years ago in Chaval. It's before they started recording. Many years ago in the Kollel. So round one the Rebbe took. Round two, Yomo almost knocked me to the floor. Correct? Okay, so I go home, and I think, you know, my many, you know, now I'm older, what can I do? So when I teach, I'm really exhausted afterwards. So I go home, I eat, and whatever I have to catch up with Malka, with what's come in. My nephew called me with a Shiloh from America, I have to give answers. All right, Baruch Hashem. And at a certain point, I'm tired, so I read light material, not Shasim Paiskim. So a book just came out. My Talmud, Rabbi, Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wien, have Talmud with a lot of titles, Bram, okay? I hope, Mark, my apologies if I missed any title. Mark is listening. So Mark sent me a gift because he lives in Chicago, and I've been to Chicago quite a few times. He sent me a gift. The book came out. Chicago Rabbis, Visionaries, Pioneers, and Leaders, 1847 to 1950, by Rabbi Moshe Kushner Zal. He died before he completed it. It was completed for him. Now, one of the rabbis they write about is a name that we all know. He came to America, and his first teaching position was in Chicago. Harav David Lifshitz, the Tzuvalka Rav. A graduate of Yeshiva University fondly recalls, I'm quoting from page 103, fondly recalls the final exams for his Gemara Shia. Before distributing the exams, the Rebbe, referring to Rav David Lifshitz, would always ask the students two questions. First, he would ask, who had 8 hours of sleep the previous night? Second, he would ask, who was eating breakfast? If he found out that any of the students had failed to sleep a full night, he would send those students to the dormitory to get some more sleep. If he had not had breakfast, he would give them some money and send them to the cafeteria for breakfast. Dr. Hexter, may I ask you, as a Harvard graduate, who has won round three, Yomo or the Rebbe? Yomo, my boy, this is for you. 2-1 so far. Let's see how round four works out. Okay, and here's the Rambam that you gave me, Talmud Torah. Okay, now, it is such a small world, I shiver and shake. I don't know if it's the Sunday class or the Monday class, but I have to hope that those of you that come only to Monday are listening to Sunday via the internet. So I mentioned how kids go off to Derech, and I'm talking about this, and I'm giving an in-house talk on this in Hollywood, Florida, by invitation only in a closed community, a house owned by a Talmud of mine. And why do people go off to Derech? So I quoted to you from the New York Times, I think it was, about two former Mir Yeshiva students in Brooklyn, Mir in Brooklyn, and boy, are these two far away from Torah, multimillionaires, run a business, I think it was in the Caribbean. I called it in class, I forget in what context. Believe it or not, I got an email from a dear student, Frank Chaffee, and Chaffee mentions he heard the tape, and he hears the story about those two Mir Yeshiva boys who made it big in Puerto Rico. His friend knew these boys very well. He worked for them. So he tells me, Rebbe, everything you said is absolutely true. But he says, one story my friend told me about them, and he wants to be Malamed Zchut. So now we're talking about two fellows who learned at Mir Yeshiva, threw away Shabbat, threw away Kashrut, threw away Taret Mishpacha, making a fortune, living in Puerto Rico. Depiction in the New York Times showed them with many young girls in the background. I needn't elaborate. My friend showed up one week at work and mentioned to one of these two kids at the time that he had lost his job, although he still had the once weekly counseling position. Bear in mind that my friend Kanayin Hara has 10 kids. The one of these two that he was talking to, I didn't know which one, asked him how he was surviving without the job. Did he need help? My friend answered, indeed it was rough. Wait right here, the future Puerto Rico playboy told him. Within 10 minutes he returned after circulating through the office in a spontaneous fundraising job and handed my friend $5,000 in checks. So gentlemen, let me smack my face. Even people who have gone so far off the derech, look of the good that still remains. So I add a prayer that halavai, these two young men should show up to this classroom, and we should be zeicha, they should see what beautiful students we have, and they'll realize that Judaism is perfect, Jews are not. Now coming back to the Rebbe and all that we're talking about, I mentioned in class, and this I know from inside sources, that the room where the Rebbe was broadcast all over the world, the language of communication was Hebrew. Most of the people working there were Yotzei Tzava and had been in Lishkat HaKesha. I don't know if you know, or you shouldn't know from it, we should never have to know from it, but it's a reality of life. But as you know, I've been on two battlefields in my life, many years in the army, but 73, I was a volunteer, and in 82, I was a conscript. So in 82, see, when you're on a battlefield, you have the frontline troops. Right behind the frontline, you have a world of support. Among the support, obviously, you have ambulances, you have a field hospital, you have to have water, you have to have food facilities, food has to be provided. It's endless what has to go on. The Chefer Kadisha, I don't have to elaborate. You also have Lishkat HaKesha. Right immediately behind the front line, you have trucks with all points of communication so that these people become masters. And many of them wandered to America, became Balei Tshuva, and they wound up, on this was the Rebbe's great ability to reach out to them, and they wound up in Chabad, Lishkat HaKesha for the Rebbe. So I got an email, two emails from Yitz Gold, who's a Chabadnik, you know, in the heart of it, and he says, yes, you mentioned that there were ex-IDF Balei Tshuva, but he said that it began with real Hasidim. In other words, there was a fellow, Chaim Halberstam, who actually is from the Rebbe's family, who became Chabad as a teenager, and there was a fellow, Hackner from England, Rifkin from Israel, and these fellas set up the Rebbe's communications. Later it was expanded. I got another email that he spoke with Chaim Halberstam, and he said Mulek Rifkin started the phone hookup, and he assisted him. Then he learned how it worked and eventually took over and managed to transist the radio translations available in phone hookups. Later on, when it went to television, they brought them more professional, etc. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't contradict what I said, but I just want to be clear for the sake of historical accuracy that the initial setup was from in-house Chabadnikim. Also, I mentioned Rabbi Shmuel Bornstein. Again, I don't know if it was the Sunday class, the Monday class, the son of Rav Noach Bornstein. So my dear student, Rabbi Moshe Elbaum, writes to me that he was a Rebbe in MTA for many years and just retired. His nephew and former MTA students don't think he ever taught any secular subjects aside from Jewish history, because I knew he taught more than Gemara. Okay, now I'm ready to roll, and I think I've caught up with all the corrections or addendums that I had to make.
Which teacher was it?
Shmuel Bornstein, the son of Reb Noach Bornstein. It's your relative.
Taught history, taught Hebrew,
yes.
American history.
So, all right, I knew he taught more than Gemara, but now we see it. I knew he knew a lot more than just Gemara. So, very, very fascinating. He was a very nice individual, and I'm happy to have a relative in class. All right, I'm ready to roll, and I'm touching upon a topic that we ended off the class with last week, and a topic that we're not going to read. Everyone is free to reach their own decision. I can only share with you my thinking on the topic. And it's mamish. I cannot tell you how much correspondence I got in the few words I mentioned. But what did we talk about last week? And we'll pick up this week again. The Rebbe's greatest innovation that we never heard of before was the concept of shluchim. And this is, you know, I grew up in the yeshiva world. I learned in YU. I learned in Lakewood. I visited Teira Vadas. I visited Chaim Berlin. If anything, outside of YU, they discouraged you from leaving the hotbed of Torah. How can you leave New York? It's like in Israel today, a kid grows up in Yerushalayim and Petach Tikva, Bnei Brak, and then you say to the kid, go to North Tel Aviv. He'll look at you, what are you, crazy? His parents will get all upset, or go to North Tel Aviv, who knows what will become of him. And here the Rebbe developed the concept that since we have to reach out to every Jew and we have to make a dirah b'tachtonim for the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have an obligation to get out and go all over. And this was his greatest innovation. And I think the heart of last week's shir, when we met last 2 weeks ago, was what the Rebbe said. And again, I give Yitzchak Deutsch all the credit. He knew the Rebbe's sichot, hundreds of them, and incorporates it in his volume. And I think what the Rebbe said, the first Rebbe, the Baal Tanya, reached out to people who were interested in Chassidut, Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu. Most Jews at that time, if not 99%, were religious, were observant. And this has to be stressed whenever I speak in public. I say I don't accept the title Reform, Conservative, Orthodox. There's one way to be a Jew. And in order to be a Jew, it's Shabbat, Kashrut, and Tarat Mishpacha, and call yourself whatever you want. You reform your lifestyle, you conserve Judaism. I do not like the word Orthodox, because I don't believe we have one doctrine. When it comes to Hashkafa, it is open and endless, and on that level, I believe in open orthodoxy. But this thought has to be stressed, because it's this is the way we have survived throughout the millennium. All right, so the Alter Rebbe reached out to Anshei Shlomeinu. The sixth Rebbe already said, we have to reach out to the children of the Enash of Anshei Shlomeinu. Because by the 1900s, and the Rav spoke about this. The Rav spoke how, when he remembers the world before World War I, where there was basically no Chilul Shabbos whatsoever. He said in the town he grew up, only the doctor and the drugstore were open Shabbos. And he said the doctor wasn't a good doctor, and the druggist didn't know what he was doing anyway. After World War I, Chilul Shabbos was rampant, and we who are Shomer Shabbos were in the minority of fact that lives on until today. Then the third Rebbe came along and said, it's not enough to reach out to Enash, to Bnei Enash, or Zera Enash. We have to reach out to every Jew, Ba'asher Husham. And then the Rebbe used the word Nesicha, and it's in the book, and it's part of Chabad ideology until today, that the goal of all the Shluchim is to turn every place where Jews are living into Eretz Yisrael. And this gets us involved. What do you mean they're using the word Eretz Yisrael? Is Eretz Yisrael a purely spiritual concept, or is it a political geographic reality? I think you all understand that the Reform Movement came along and declared Eretz Yisrael, as Rabbi Rubin said last time we met, they declared it to be a spiritual concept. There is no return to Zion. There's no need to a return for Zion. America is our Jerusalem, the Columbus platform. Germany is our Jerusalem. We're happy, we're cultured, we're assimilated, we're accepted. Well, forget about these concepts of nationalism, jingoism, chauvinism, call it as you wish. And here we find that the Lubavitcher Rebbe is saying we have to turn it into Eretz Yisrael. Not only the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you'll hear at our Good at Yisrael conventions the exact same concept being expressed. Now, I want to say, and I said this last week, and you can agree with me or disagree, I don't believe the Lubavitcher Rebbe was an apikoros. I don't believe that at our Good at Yisrael, the Novominska Rebbe is an apikoros. Chas v'chalila. But what they're trying to say, and I hope I'm right, is that if we are not privileged to live in Yerushalayim, but we live in Melbourne, and we live in Brooklyn, and we live in Cape Town, and we live in London, at least, kol zman we're living there, we should make it spiritually as good as Eretz Yisrael. It has to be pure, it has to be exalted. My proof to what I'm saying is, when I grew up in Lithuania 200 years ago, everyone referred to Vilna as Yerushalayim Dalita. You've all heard that. I'm not making it up. And I can't believe the Vilna Gaon and the Macheshet and Reb Chaim Moisek Grishinsky and Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. I can't believe that they really thought Vilna's Yerushalayim. But what they meant, there's no question, in Lithuania, that was the hotbed of Yiddishkeit. That was Yerushalayim. And that's the way I would understand it on that level. Now, I do admit there are people in Brooklyn who have deep guilt consciences, and I once addressed an audience it was in North Miami Beach. I'll never forget this. And it was a school that was founded to be like Beit Yaakov, but to be slightly more open-minded than Beit Yaakov. And the head of the school was an ex-Bnei Akivanik who became more Haredi, to use popular language, more black, they would say, in America. And I gave a talk on Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, what we have accomplished here today, and I could see this individual was suffering because he understood he made the wrong choice in life. He could have lived the dream, but he chose not to. And there are people who probably will tell you, no, there's no Eretz Yisrael, but this is apikrosim, plain apikrosim. They can daven three times a day, but it doesn't mean you're not an apikoros. They talk about the Mitzvah apikoros. They claim the story is absolutely true, that some good Jew in Vilna had questions and wanted to become a shtickel and apikoros and Tanakh and Eben Ezra. I don't have to go into the Eben Ezra, you understand? So they told them, travel to Minsk, and you'll meet there. There's a big apikoros who you'll meet in the big shul. Zitzan Avinkel, he sits in a corner. Travel to Minsk and meet him. So this guy travels to Minsk, and he comes into the big shul, and he asks the elderly Yidden there, Avu is the apikoros? Where's the apikoros? They show him, Zitzdotna, he's sitting there in the corner with the talus over his head, with talus and tefillin. And a zuck, and he's saying to heal him, and he goes over to this guy, he says, excuse me, I thought they told me you're a big apikoros. He said, Avada b'necha apikoros, abich b'nechet ayid, I'm also a Jew. A Jew has to wear a talis and tefillin. So you can have people who wear talis, tefillin, daven three times a day, but if they tell you Borough Park is Jerusalem and there's no mitzvah of aliyah, and Jews who settle here don't have a mitzvah every moment that they're doing something productive and constructive in Binyan Aretz, they're apikarsim, plain and simple. But now we come to a much more delicate problem that is with us at this very moment. Tell me. I go back to the Mossad now. I go back to Lishkat HaKesher. I go back to Rehov Albert Mendel, I believe it was 23 in Tel Aviv. It doesn't exist today. It's a big park But Seichel Adava, they have the name, in the park where you can walk, they have the original street signs. It's Seichel Adava. Everything was knocked down. It's amazing what has happened over the years, but life has to move on. So at a moment of lightness, when we didn't have to make decisions and weren't dealing with the nitty-gritty of what was involved with sending people to Russia under false identity, trying to get visas out of Russia, people requesting a visa, trying to get the visas back, to request the answer back into Russia. So we always debated one little topic. And that topic is very simple. Is our goal just to get Jews out of Russia? Or do we have a goal that stands parallel to it to create Judaism in Russia? And this is a very delicate question. Chabad, the Rebbe, always took the attitude that if you're doing something good in Russia for Yiddishkeit, remain there for a number of years. Don't run out. Don't come in Aliyah right away. Chabad always had the attitude, we want to build Yiddishkeit wherever Jews are. Is this a valid attitude? Well, no. Should we say, get them out, bring them out, do what you can? And now, on a practical basis, this was a tremendous burning question. When Jews came out and America opened its gates to them, what do we tell these Jews? Israel only? Or our main goal is to get them out? Let them decide where they want to go. And this question was debated endlessly. Obviously, in Lishkat HaKesha, I remember Aryeh Kroll, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, telling me time and again, you have to say to the Jews in Russia, Anachnu lo mesaknim et chayenu kedem shatem yelchu migola legola. We're not risking our lives coming here under false pretense, so you should go from one gullus to another gullus. Eretz Yisrael only. But this question lives on. In Russia today, I was just recently sent an article by my dear Talmud, Rav Yehoshua, and I have the article here, and Rav Yehoshua Grunstein, it's an article by Rav Chevron Shiloh, where he comes out very strongly against Chabad in Russia. Why? And he describes, he visited there, and he sees they're building schools, and they bring in shluchot from Israel, from America, and he says, why don't you come in Aliyah? And they give the answer, our goal is to build Yiddishkeit here. We're not here to inspire Aliyah. And he compares the Chabad shluchim to the Bnei Akiva shluchim who go to Russia. Our shluchim are inspiring Aliyah. On the other hand, they have nowhere near the success of the Chabadnikim, the Breslovers, for one simple reason, and we'll come back to this in more detail in the future. Shluchim go for 3 years, 4 years. Chabadnikim go for life. And this is like in America. Many times I came to communities when I traveled the length and breadth of the United States, and you would see shluchim from Eretz Yisrael. They come for 3 years. You know what that means, coming for 3 years? Kids comes to St. Louis from a Hesda yeshiva, finished army, filled with idealism. Doesn't speak the language. His high school English is not enough to enable him to communicate properly. So it takes him at least a year to learn the slang, to learn what baseball is, to play the game. All right, we'll say it takes a year. Basic English he has. Every kid in Israel who went to a yeshiva tichonid has to know English. You watch television, you have to know English. You play with a computer, you have to know English. But does that English compare to my English? I mean, I have a terrible problem. I get constant requests from people about who to talk to in America about this or that. they think I still live in America. I've lived here 47 years. I don't want to go into all the other. I just got one request, and I answered this morning on the telephone. Who do I talk to in YU Public Relations? Sure, I can send them to Sam Hotstein, who's my best friend, the head of YUPR, the man who set it up. There's only one problem. In order to talk to Sam Hotstein, you got to figure out how to get to Olam Haba. I don't know who's running it today, but right, I speak English. This was a big factor when we worked for the Mossad, who we sent to Russia. It wasn't enough just to have English American citizenship. You can have American citizenship, like, I don't want to give you names, people who were born in America. Their fathers were there at the UN for the State of Israel. They were born in America. I have a granddaughter-in-law that has American citizenship. Her aunt, the survivor of the Holocaust, became married to Satma. She's a closet Zionist. Married to Satma. Had contacts, a little money. Her niece, living in Israel, couldn't conceive. She spoke with the doctor. The doctor said, bring her here. I'll take care of her for nothing. I mean, your Jew wants to help. So two daughters were born in America. The doctor said, come back a third time, I'll give you a son. And my machatenister said, no, I can't handle America. She never came back a third time. But these two girls have American citizenship. All right, my granddaughter was very bright. She knows English, but she doesn't speak it like an American. She doesn't know baseball. Takes a year to learn. Then he gives you 1 year, he communicates. Then the third year, he's worried, what will I do when I get back to Israel? How will I make Parnassa? How will they accept me? Let's say you convince him to stay a second year. So now he stays 2 years, you get 2 good years, but his wife is going crazy, the kids are getting older. This is not an education, this is not a school, this is not Yerid Shemayim, this is not Avira Diara. The fourth year, forget it, his mind is, what is he going to do when he gets back? A Chabadnik goes, he goes for life. He becomes a native. Look who is the chief rabbi of Russia today. Look who won and was awarded the highest award by the president of the Soviet Union, Vladimir Putin. What's his name? Beryl Lazar. Who's Beryl Lazar? An American kid. His parents were sent by the Seventh Rebbe to Italy. He grew up English, perhaps native language, Yiddish native language, Italian fluently. He went to Russia. He's a Russian today. He speaks Russian better than Putin. When Russia had to announce why they're conquering Yomo's old homeland, the Ukraine, and giving them a knockout punch, who sat in the audience applauding? You can't get away with it, Yomo. Today, if you blow your nose incorrectly, it's on YouTube the next day. You understand? This is Rabbi Beryl Lazar I'm talking about. So this is a very delicate question, and that article criticizes the Jews in Russia, what they're doing, Chabad and Breslov and building. Tell them, get out, come in Aliyah. Okay.
Can I ask you a question? Did I say a prayer for Medinat Yisrael?
I don't know. I can't answer. I would imagine, let's say yes, they do say a prayer for Medinat Yisrael. I would imagine yes, certainly for the Tzava. Alan Blau, my student Dr. Blau, on what we discussed last week, that the Rebbe used the concept of Eretz Yisrael outside of Eretz Yisrael. He sends me a printout from a sefer by a very well-known rabbi, Shlomo Chaim HaKohen Avinea. This is Rav Avinea. The sefer is called Tal Hermon, in Iyunim B'Torah. And you go to page 293, and he rips apart those that say wherever a Jew can live, he can turn it into Eretz Yisrael. The Ein Kvat Sodech Sheya'alula Aretz. And he goes in that Moshe Rabbeinu desperately wanted to see Eretz Yisrael. He evidently understood that Eretz Yisrael is not in Chutzla Aretz. I received a question this week. Again, I answered that. I really don't know how to answer it because I've lived out of America 47 years, but I gave some advice. And this is from a wonderful young lady, a Talmidah of ours. Something has been weighing heavily on my mind for the past month. and I'm not sure what to do or where to turn. Part of my job at YU is helping Jewish educators find jobs in Jewish day schools. Most people I speak with are Americans looking for work in Israel. But recently, I've received a few inquiries from Jews in France and Hungary who are looking to move to the United States. They are teachers, so they've been in touch with me about job openings in American day schools. They are afraid for their lives and families, which I totally understand. The thing is, few schools are willing to supply work visas. In parentheses, you realize there's a big responsibility because they have to guarantee they're going to employ them. They're going to see that they don't become a public need, publicly appealing for funds, that these people will be taken care of. That's the reality. I asked them about Israel, you know, these teachers, as I imagine it's much easier to gain citizenship there and easier to acclimate because they are fluent in Hebrew. They are set in America. So you see, this question comes up time and time again with many variations. I'll tell you my approach. You can agree or disagree. And I always felt like this. We cannot force people to make aliyah. Aliyah, I look back at my own life, it was the greatest decision I ever made to listen to my wife after the Six-Day War and come in aliyah. Personal, greatest decision, no two ways about it. It's not easy. You know my vart, it's a powerful vart. The order is wrong. When you left South Africa to come visit Israel, what did you leave first? First you leave your home, your state, then your country. The plane leaves the border. Yeah, lech lecha meyatzecha, leave your land, the border first. Moladcha, your state, beit avicha, the opposite order. But the Torah is very profound. Coming in Aliyah, the easiest thing to leave is the country. No big deal, I was born in America. If it wouldn't cost so much to give up my American citizenship, believe me, I would. They'd judge your fortune to give it up. I'm ashamed of America. The president, the attitude, the State Department, the enmity towards Israel. All right, maybe I'm wrong, maybe we just see the headlines in the New York Times. A Talmud just came back and told me the New York Times is responsible for the death of endless Jews. They go on and on that we're terrorists, we don't have right any to be here. Yehuda, Shomron, Jerusalem, it's beyond words. And this is a newspaper founded by Jews, run by Jews until today. Many writers are Jews. God have mercy, assimilation on top of assimilation. So, to leave America is no big deal. Ah, Moladcha, to leave the Bronx is still in me. I still root for the Yankees. And it's a terrible thought. What do I give a hoot if the Yankees win or the Yankees lose? It's a terrible thought. What are you? You're an old man already. You're a mature man. You've spent millions of hours learning and teaching Torah. Add up all the hours I've given Shayurim over 57 years. Kanai Nara. Why do you care about the Yankees? But you see, that's you grew up. The Yankees, the candy store, the bank around the corner, the barbershop. I mean, the stories I can tell you, the Bronx that I knew. That's a little harder to leave. And of course, mi beit avicha, your family, your friends, the shul you daven in, the beis medrash, we talk a little lashon hara, you follow that. That's the hardest to leave. So I always go with the sheet that we have to inspire aliyah, absolutely. But in order to inspire aliyah, you need Jews. And I am willing to bet that research will bear me out. The more Jewish communities you create, the finer the aliyah. And yes, I understand Chabad. They want to build if Jews are there and Mashiach's not here. Now, and I have friends who became Charedim. And, you know, they argue with me again. They have to bite their tongues because, Baruch Hashem, what a difference 50 years later where their grandchildren are and where my, and I don't elaborate what their grandchildren's values are and what Professor Tarrigan's grandchildren's values are. What a difference. Jay, your children, what a difference in values to the people you left behind in Brookline. Am I right or wrong, Yitzchak? I see these children. Kanayin hara, kanayin hara. Wow, wow, wow. But you have to inspire. You can't force. And there's a lot to be said. Build more communities in Russia. Build more shuls. Build more yeshiva. Build more mate medrash. But somehow, lech lecha me'atzecha, the Torah rubs off upon you. The Ramban, Maimonides, Hilchat Melachim, the Ramban, his longing for Eretz Yisrael, Yehuda Halevi, the Kuzari, the more you learn, what a beautiful aliyah. What a difference between the United States and France. From France today, they're rushing here, running away, frightened for their lives. From the United States, a small aliyah, but a steady aliyah. And what an aliyah. What quality. And what nachat a guy like Aaron Rakefet has from the original faculty of BMT 69, when it began with 10 students, the whole concept of exporting Torah to the Anglo world. Take a look how many of my Talmidim have come in Aliyah. I spent the Shabbat in Beit Shemesh, and I was not nice, but you have to forgive me. Everyone invites me, and they don't understand. I don't have the energy to say yes to. I have to teach the Sunday and Monday class. My whole life centers around these two classes, and you know how hard I work preparing. And I finally said, Beit Shemesh was bothering me for 2 years. I finally said yes to Shabbos when there was no school Sunday, and I was able to relax. And what a reception, what warmth, what love from my hundreds and hundreds of students in Beit Shemesh. So I want to tell you, that is my opinion. And you want the proof of the pudding? With all that Lubavitch is doing all over the world, the heart of Lubavitch is right here in the state of Israel. Kfar Chabad and everything that goes with it, Kiryat Malachi, parts of Yerushalayim, wherever you are, and so many fine, great, wonderful individuals who the Rebbe know, Liban Chashke B'Torah. I never yet heard that the Rebbe should tell a balabas who said, Rebbe, Ich will gain af aliyah. I never heard the Rebbe say no. Mechanchim Rabbanim, yes, exactly like my Rebbe, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. If you went and asked the Lubavitch, and I know cases of people who asked the Lubavitch a Rebbe, and then they were foolish enough to listen, plain and simple. Ani Rothkopf, that was a little smarter. I didn't ask the Rav. I wrote Rebbe a letter. I'm coming to visit you at your apartment on this day at this time to take a Birchat Preda. I'm going in Aliyah. I presented him with a fait accompli. And I went to take a Birchat Preda from him, to take a Birchat Preda from David Lifshitz. And you saw the difference between their personalities. The Rav said to me, and this is classic Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Rav said to me, how will you make a living? That's exactly. The Rav was so practical, down to earth. I never was able to answer that question when I came back many years later and he embraced me and hugged me. I hear what you're doing. It's wonderful. I'm so proud of you. But I was waiting for him to say, and how do you make a living? Oh boy, Baruch Hashem. Rav David Lifshitz said to me, if we mentioned him, if he hit Yomo over the head before. So Rav David said to me, Ata lo mefached? And I answered him, Ani Someich al Tzvach Haganali Yisrael v'al HaRibbeinu Shel Olam. And then we went into a whole discussion that my order is right. Yaakov Avinu, how he prepared. If I would meet Reb David today, I would say, yeah, after living here 47 years, and if you heard the headlines at 9 o'clock this morning again, oh my gosh, another ring of thieves, gangsters, women assaulted, oh my gosh. I would answer today, I want to smack Rothkopf's face. Give him a smack. The answer is ani somech al haribayni shalaylem v'yal tzvah and al Yisrael. You follow? I have to revert the order. So I just want to tell you, it's an open question. I cannot tell you kiblu et dati. Believe me, there's no greater religious Zionist sitting in this room than yours truly. I would love to see every Jew here. I'm going to give them hell in America in one of the talks I'm giving. The Tolichenu komi miyut la'atzenu. Come in dignity. Don't come running away like a frightened sheep. But I understand not everyone is ready yet. Not everyone can handle it. Turn them into good Jews. And ultimately, either they, their children, their grandchildren will wake up. And once the first member of the family comes, you have the breakthrough. It attracts. I spoke with someone yesterday in America and I gave them hell. They have to come in Aliyah. And I said, you already have 3 children living here. Endless grandchildren. The time has come. And it's difficult. Remember, I understand it. Okay, but I still want to say, I don't believe the Rebbe, God forbid, really thought that Brooklyn's Eretz Yisrael. But until Mashiach comes, it's the old Chabad thesis that we have to do what we can all over the world and in every place they're Jews and create it into a Litta like Vilna of Litta, Yerushalayim de Litta. They used to call Denver, by the way. Denver was known as the Yerushalayim of the West. Denver, Colorado. Yes. I don't understand what you mean. The objection to what?
The objection for them saying that Rabbanim shouldn't go to Israel.
The reason is very simple. I understand the reason. Look. The Rav once met me. We were in the elevator together in the main academic center. We were riding up, whatever it was. And Rebbe said to me, "I hear that you can excite a class teaching a Tosfot, and keep up the good work." You have to understand. We grew up in America. We know the lingo. We know the language. We know the mentality. All right, I admit I'm equally at home in Hebrew and equally at home in the Michalah. There used to be Rabbi Koopman said to me, he said, you're one of the few teachers I have that succeeds equally well with the Israeli classes and with the foreign student classes. And girls from the foreign students who stayed on in Michalah and had me in advanced classes couldn't believe I'm the same person. They say, Rebbe, your whole demeanor is different, your whole deportment, your sense of humor is different. I said, yes, in these classes, I'm an Israeli. I used to have dib, dab, and dub. You know what a dib was? Dear Israeli brother. A dab, dear Anglo-Saxon brother. And the goal of Mashiach is to turn us into the dear utopian brother. Take the good out of each one and combine it, synthesize it. So you have to understand, it's not so simple. You're becoming an Israeli. You're still more at home in English. Your mentality is more American than Israeli. You did not serve in the army. You have to understand, it's a low pashut. The fact that they don't take guys like you to the army today is your loss. You should know that. I'm lucky, or I'm not lucky, that I was here after before the Yom Kippur War. They didn't touch Americans, dual citizenship problem. After the Yom Kippur War, they took everyone standing upright who was under 40 years of age. I was 38 when I did basic. So, but that was a great experience, because the army, you really learn the inner workings, you meet from all types of society. It opens so many doors to you of understanding. And ultimately, let me be honest, I couldn't be involved with Mossad had I not gone through the army. Okay? Yitzchak was an officer in the army. Don't minimize. He was an officer in the American army and an officer in the Israeli army.
But isn't it important also that Americans make other Americans feel
that... Look. I lectured on that years ago. You're not going to catch me. The Rakefet program is every Jew in the world should come in Aliyah. The Jews left in Chutz Laretz, so from Israel we send Shluchim. We pay your salary from here. Could you imagine if every shul in America had a rabbi who speaks perfect English, was born, raised in America, came in Aliyah, now goes back for 5 years, his salary paid by the state of Israel. You are an independent, honest rabbi. You follow? There is a solution. But I understand. I don't want to minimize the Rav or the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Their attitude was, look, you speak the language, you know the mentality. There was a Rabbi Green outside of Toronto, terrific individual. Why are you older than I am? I hope he's alive, if anyone can tell me. I don't know. He was, what was his first name? Do you remember? It's Morty.
Hamilton,
Ontario. I think it was Morty Green. And a terrific individual. And he was gung ho aliyah. And the Rebbe, and he went to the Rav, the Rebbe. The Rebbe I know he went to for sure, and I believe the Rav told him, you got to remain in America, you got to remain in Canada, your success is so great, no one can equal you. There's something to be said for that. On the other hand, if you really want to come in Aliyah, take a look what Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein did. He even added a new word to the Hebrew language. You know what I'm talking about? You're in Upan Moshe. I saw the word after he died, the eulogies in Mariv, in Yediot, and I break my eyes. What is this talking about? He, even though he was Hu Haya Hu Hishpia Kokachabein Lam Rocha Hu Haya Outsider. Outsider. What is an outsider? Outsider. He didn't grow up here. He wasn't part of the crowd. He didn't have the connections. He wasn't Denash on Shei Shlomenu. Okay, it's an open question. I tell anyone, if you come in Aliyah, it will change your life, change who you are, change your abilities. I don't want to go any further. I can tell you with my own life, story upon story, but I've said enough.
If somebody, okay. If somebody in America making sure that families are coming on Aliyah, isn't that also important?
That a family is
a rabbi gets, over the course of 20 years being in the rabbinate, gets 10 to 15 families to make Aliyah.
Terrific. Yeah, of course it's important. That's my point of view. That's what I'm telling you. I'm not one to yell and scream at Chabad because they're building a shul and a school someplace in Siberia today. Let them build it. Let them create Jews. You create Jews, ultimately it results in Aliyah B'Zman Hazeh. And if you want to have influence on Jews, the more influence you have on Israel, you have no idea the impact when we will have a president who wears a kippah at all times, a prime minister who wears a kippah. It's amazing today, the head of the Mossad, the head of the Shabakh, the next attorney general, the head of the police, one appointment after another. Three out of the four wear kippah. It's a shame that Cohn doesn't, because he's just as frim as any one of us here. I mean, I told you, I know the family personally. I'm related to them. Remember what I said. You know you've lived in Israel too long when you're related to the most famous people in Israel. There used to be a cartoon in the Jerusalem Post in the 70s. My father, Zechon Levracha, loved that. You know you've lived in Israel too long when the bus driver knows you by name. And my father, Taka, took the same bus drive every day, and he knew my father, Mordechai. Good morning, Mr. Mordechai. Mashlomcha. And my father, you know, didn't speak Hebrew, but he understood that much. But I say, you know, you've lived in Israel too long when you know all the big shots and all the people being thrown into jail and all the criminals. Baruch Hashem. All right, let me go further. Okay, now, what's fascinating is that this innovation of shluchim and this innovation of going away, and we're going to talk about it in great length, we won't finish today, because this is the innovation of the Rebbe. His learning was phenomenal. His publications and what the Talmidim have published, it's without an end. You can fill this whole room with svarim, with that original svarim of the Rebbe, his insights, his hitvadut, his chidushim, his letters. But the shluchim was an entirely new concept. It was as revolutionary as the Rebbe abolishing the shtreimel. You have to understand. So in 1952, the Hasidim in Eretz Yisrael, now the Hasidim in Eretz Yisrael, you would occasionally see someone, a Chabadnik with a shtreimel, particularly it's now from the much older generation. Those are Hasidim from Eretz Yisrael, from Yerushalayim, basically. There always was a Chabad presence here. There was a big Chabad presence in Hebron. Hebron got wiped out in 1929. The rabbi, his family, Slonim, were wiped out, killed. They were all Chabadnikim. Hebron was a Chabad city. And a great deal of that moved to Jerusalem. They found some of the innovations very difficult. Until today, you may find one or two still wearing a shtreimel. When you see movies of the Rebbe out of the 60s into the 70s, and you'll see among the thousands at the Fabrengen a shtreimel or two, you can be sure those are Eretz Yisrael Jews wearing the visiting the Rebbe. And the Rebbe was very makpid that you shouldn't change your headgear simply to look like him. There's the famous story of when Reb Mendel Fatafas, if I'm pronouncing his name right, is one of the great Chabadnikim in Russia, who survived World War II, survived Stalin, had been in labor camp, finally got out, and he came to visit the Rebbe, came to the Fabrengen, and he comes into the Fabrengen in 770 with the Chabad hat. Again, every chassid you can tell in a minute who he belongs to by the hat he wears. You look at Rakefetz, keep Masruga. My wife said, what are you wearing? What does it match? I said, I'm wearing black pants today, but I'm in a jolly mood. This is a kippah for a jolly mood. So, yeah, all right, you can't figure out who you belong to. So many different colors. So, Fatam Reb Mendel came in. He was a mashpi in Chabad, 770. He was a towering figure, a legendary figure. And Reb Mendel came in with the Rebbe's black hat, and the Rebbe saw thousands of people. The Rebbe saw, immediately sent the shaliach over to Reb Mendel and told him a very simple message from the Rebbe: go home and put on the hat you wore in Russia, you wore in labor camp. That's the hat that you have to wear. You don't change. And being a chassid, he went home, left his black hat at home, and came back with his Russian cap that he never took off afterwards. And you can see pictures of Reb Mendel with that hat. And it's a very, very powerful message. It had great impact on me in Chinuch. I always encouraged my students, go back to where you came from. Educate within. Don't look to go outside your circle and become more frum and more this, more that. You grew up in that atmosphere. You can handle it. You understand it. Go back and educate within. In other words, keep that hat on that you wore before you got here. Now, the Hasidim in Israel, they sent a letter to the Rebbe. The Rebbe was young. It's 1952. It's a few months after he became Rebbe, a year afterwards in 1951. And you have to understand, no one will talk back to the Rebbe in the 70s or the 80s. But in 52, the Elter HaChassidim felt that they have a right to express their opinion. And they wrote to the Rebbe that they don't understand this concept of shluchim and reaching out and going among Jews who don't know what Shabbos is and kashrut and trying lekarev otam. What this is not the way that they were raised. And you have to remember, within Hasidus, and I think it's true of the entire Torah world today, our basic attitude is to keep within, to build the shelter, to keep the fortress up. I mean, I know myself, I'm offended when I see Jews being mechalel Shabbos. And if I have a choice, I don't want to live in a neighborhood where there's rampant chilul Shabbos. I saw the difference between Tel Aviv and Rehavia when I was in Tel Aviv a few weeks ago on Shabbos. And believe me, you feel the difference. And if you know the news in Israel, I spoke about it yesterday, today already, all the newspapers are commenting. A major decision was made by the government yesterday, which is going to create tremendous warfare, bloody battles in Tel Aviv and a few other places. But our natural desire is we want to be Tzivishin Unzara with ours, Enash, Hansei Shlomeinu. My grandson, I have about six grandsons in active service right now, two on active service, another four called up to Miluim. Have one grandson who's up in the Golden Heights now. So he told me he's so happy to get back to his chevra, his unit at Tzanchanim. He got the okay. He was injured in battle, and the doctor said he's okay. He can go back. He can fight, he can handle the gun, he can run, he can do everything he used to do, Baruch Hashem, ani modeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he's so happy. This is a natural instinct. This is part of the army, that it creates a feeling that you're no longer a single person, but you're part of a unit. And these Hasidim are complaining to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe writes back, and he quotes the letter where the Rebbe writes back, this is the calling of our generation. Times have changed. We're the Shvi, everything we spoke about. And if we're the Shvi, we have to complete the job of bringing God down to earth. The Rabba Tachtonim, he quotes the Midrashim we quoted a few weeks ago. But you see, the Rebbe answered them. He didn't retreat. He remained firm, strong. At another Chabad Fabrenian at this time, the Rebbe spoke publicly. And here I think he's answering Lakewood, because he's raising the very question I heard in Lakewood. When I learned in Lakewood, we're going back to the early 50s. So you got to remember, Torah Judaism is very small in America. Lakewood, I was privileged in Lakewood to breathe Lithuanian air. It was not an Americanized institution yet. Today, you go to Lakewood, there's no Lithuania there. It's Lakewood in the United States of America, 1,000%, for better or for worse. This is the reality. I mean, I'm not criticizing Lakewood. If I'm saying this about Lakewood, Alachat Kama Vakama, this is the story with YU today, 100%. It's not the YU I attended. It's not the YU Rabbi Revel, my cousin, envisioned. It's not yeshivas from Schol Chanan. But times are different, times have changed, and it's a challenge to keep the message firm and complete and burning with fiery flames with all the new developments. Now, in Lakewood, I learned in Lakewood, half the yeshiva were survivors from Kletz, from the old world, and it was Litvish, learning, nothing else in life but learning. And the criticism of Chabad with the Rebbe was first beginning, and like the Israelis criticized the Rebbe, Lakewood, Beitul Torah, take kids out of the school, out of the yeshiva, stand on street corners, Beitul Torah, what are they doing? And boy, oh boy, Lakewood and Chabad were two totally opposite poles. So the Rebbe evidently heard what was being said, and he gives the sicha. You get the source right in the Deutsch, and he gives the sicha. Doesn't the Torah world understand? This generation is different than any previous generation. We have to complete the work. We are the seventh. We have to complete the dwelling place for the Ribbono Shel Olam in this world. And in order to do it, at times, listen to this, I'm quoting the Rebbe word by word, we have to leave the Beis Medrash and go out and bring other Jews into our camp. They have to accept the yoke of Torah, so God will have where to live. Our generation is different. We cannot just say it's you, the individual, develop your spirituality, keep on learning, and that is sufficient. No, our generation is to reach out to every Jew, Bahashehu Sham. We must complete the work of the six previous generations. And to me, that's a direct answer to Lakewood. Will Lakewood accept it? At that time, no. All of you know that today, there are many Lakewood outreach kolels that, in their way, I often say it's not the Chabad way, it's the Litvish way, but give you an example in Beverly Hills, in the big shul in Beverly Hills, Beth Jacob, you have a Lakewood Kollel, headed up by Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Reines' great-great-grandson. His father is right here in this building right now, Rabbi Gordon. He teaches in Torah Shraga. He's married to a great-granddaughter of Rabbi Reines, a great-great-granddaughter of Rabbi Reines. You can check with him the exact relationship. It comes down through Rabbi Tzipperstein, who taught at YU, Rabbi Victor Tzipperstein, who was a grandson of Rabbi Reines. And this Rabbi Reines Jr. heads up a Lakewood Kollel. All right, Rakefet visited there, and Rakefet was stupid enough to tell him off. What are you doing in Beverly Hills? You belong in Israel. I'm anical from Rabbi Reines. But that Kollel is the new type of Lakewood Kollel. They're learning the morning, learning the afternoon, and then outreach to the whole community. Endless classes, learning. You should see the crowd that comes in at night. And this is in Beit Jacob, a hotbed of modern orthodoxy, the most important shul, perhaps second only to Kehillat Jeshurun in the United States. Influence, wealth, charity. This is Beit Jacob. And there's that Lakewood Kollel. And there's the Rebbe's message reaching out. All right? They reach out, learning. It's a Litvish way, but it's outreach. In my time, had you suggested that to Rabbi Aaron Cutler, he would have looked at you very askance. Learning is for the chosen few, and the more they learn, the better. And it's not enough just to be a simple Talmud Chacham. One has to be a Gadol B'Torah. He would quote the tshuva that I analyzed in class many years ago of Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich in the Birchat Shmuel, volume 1 on Kedushin, pages 38 to 42. Part of it I translate in Bernard Revel, Guild of American Jewish Orthodoxy. Ribbono Shel Olam, even in Lakewood today, there is outreach. And the Rebbe at that Fabrengen said something which I think characterizes everything we've said in this Sheyur today. And the Rebbe said, years ago, it was sufficient to outreach, to bring Hasidus to Pshutim. It's the Rebbe's word, Apashat Yid, a simple Jew, the average Jew. He was Shomer Shabbos, Kashrut, Mikveh, but he didn't know too much. He was a simpleton. He worked hard. There was no time to learn. There was no formal education. You all know that in Europe everything was haphazard and desolatory. It's not like today you have formal education. And today we have to outreach a Pashut Yid. Halavai, we should have Pashut Yid. Today we have to outreach to Jews who know absolutely nothing from Yiddishkeit, distant from mitzvah, Torah, of any understanding, Jews who basically are on a different planet. And that's the goal. This is the seventh generation. We can't sit by. And as big as we become in learning in Yirat Shemayim, we still are not complete until we transfer that goal, that quest, that understanding to Jews all around us. As distant as they are, as ignorant as they are, as unobservant as they are, this is the seventh generation. Go to it. That's the Rebbe. These are the Shluchim. Okay. With me? Want to go one step further now. We'll deal with Shluchim in a little bit more detail on a practical level, but I want to go one step further to trying to understand some of the revolutionary thought of the seventh Rebbe. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehachon Yevedero. One of the amazing people on the Lubavitcher scene today is someone named Rabbi Chaim Miller. Rabbi Chaim Miller, the story that I'm told, he was a typical English boy growing up in a typical Western assimilated home. Went to, I believe it was Cambridge, and In college, Chabad Shluchim reached out to him and he started showing an interest in Judaism. Today, from what I gather, Rabbi Chaim Miller is in his 40s. He's one of the most learned Lubavitcher Chassidim in the world. Those of you that have seen the volume he put out, like RC, Art Scroll has the Art Scroll Chumash, and like the OU today has put out Breshit and Shmot of a Chumash based upon the Rub's teachings. Believe on Lustiger is involved and others. Dr. Lustiger, very capable, very competent. Chaim Miller has put out a volume on the Rebbe's teachings on Chumash. It is fabulous. You got to see it, to see the depth of it, to see how he organized it. Kol hakavod. And it's a single-handed job. This is his biography of the Rebbe is the best biography you will ever get. It is a chassid writing about the Rebbe, but writing from a scholarly point of view. I've seen critique of the volume where chassidim are a little bit upset that he writes about the Rebbe in pure scientific Western terms. It's not like Rabbatan Steinsaltz's beautiful volume on the Rebbe, where he declares that the Rebbe had Ruach HaKodesh. Okay. It's not like Rabbi Klushkin, Joe Klushkin's volume on the Rebbe, where you get the Rebbe, his life and understanding, but from the vantage point, the prisma of Rabbi Klushkin. And he was criticized that he makes the Rebbe too open-minded, too Western-oriented, okay? By Chassidim. You take Chaim Miller's volume, he tries to trace the Rebbe's life year by year by year. It is a fabulous volume. It is unique. There are people that are very bright in this world. They're like Einsteins. Whatever they touch becomes gold. It's like Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. These are unique people, very unique. It's not just a photographic mind, it's more than that. A mind that sees everything 70 different levels of depth at one time. All right? The name of his volume is also interesting. Turning Judaism Outward. It's a very apropos name. This is the cover of the volume, Turning Judaism Outward. Picture of the Rebbe. I think the hat is gray, it's not black. The Rebbe as a young man, you know, people have to realize that even great people were young at times. Now, I want to quote two incidents, beginning on page 39. One incident has nothing to do with Shluchim, but it's something we touched upon a year ago, and I think this adds a little depth to understanding the Rebbe. And here you come to a problem that, again, these are questions in life that there's no black and white solution. Rav Shinshiful Hirsch, I saw him, a volume came out in the 70s by the head of Judaic Studies at Stern College, Noah Rosenblum, Zichrono Lefracha. And in that volume on Rav Hirsch, and he was a non-Hirschian writing about Rav Hirsch, so everyone was waiting to see what a non-Hirschian would write about Rav Hirsch. It's a very fascinating volume, but in the volume he criticizes Rav Hirsch because Choreb, his work on the mitzvot, was only supposed to be an introduction to a major work like the Mora Nevuchim, taking mitzvah by mitzvah. And Rav Hirsch never got to it. Chorev remains Chorev and never went beyond. Tell me, is that fair to criticize Rav Hirsch because he never finished it? I'll ask another question. When the Rav took ill and no longer functioned, Lo aleinu. So the family searched his drawers. Murray, not for socks, but for manuscripts. And they found a manuscript, an introduction for what was supposed to be the halachic mind. In English. Not the halachic man, not ish halacha, Talachic Mind, where the Rav wrote an unbelievable introduction, developing the thesis that we learn Jewish philosophy from the Halacha. And he plans to write a major volume on this exact topic. No? Has anyone seen that volume? Natan? Have you seen it? Absolutely not. All they published was that introduction. Right or wrong? That was published. But it's only an introduction. So now we're going to criticize the Rav that he never published what he said he would as a youngster. And of course, what I'm alluding to is the reality of life. And I have to admit, maybe I'm guilty. I had many offers over the decades to be a dean, a provost, a president, a rosh yeshiva, this or that, and to make a living. And I turned it all down because I had been in the rabbinate, I'd been in the active rabbinate for one decade. And I understood the minute you get involved with more than just learning, you can't be machadesh. You can't bring your mind to the level you want to. And I'm a litvak. I plead guilty. So I turned it all down and I remained at my desk. And Baruch Hashem, the little bit I accomplished, all I do is learn and write and innovate and think and don't do anything else. Good or bad, it's a value judgment. Do we have a right to criticize people? What the Rav got involved with? Halavai, we could just sit in a winkle in a corner, no distractions, no telephone, no emails. Some businessman, I read in the New York Times, every day in his office there were 350 emails waiting for him. He ripped the whole computer out and told his secretaries, I will never look at a computer again. And he went on to make another $50 million without being distracted, $100 million, etc. So you see, it's not fair to criticize. Rav Hirsch was a young man. He got involved in changing the world. What do you want out of the Rav? He became a Rebbe in YU. He originally was not a Rebbe. He arrived in America in 1932. He didn't give a shir in YU until 10 years later, 1941. Count the years on your fingers. You'll see it's 10 years later. What do you want out of him? He organized Maimonides. He headed up the RCA Halachic Commission and all that goes with it. He fought the battle we spoke about yesterday for the Mechitza. It's interesting to think who the Lubavitcher Rebbe would have been had he not become Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he just could have devoted himself to learning, to thinking, to using his mind with his knowledge. Now, beginning on page 39, Miller makes a very interesting point, which we alluded to last year. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, at a very early age, and some of the letters survived. Look at Miller, look at the footnotes. The individual he was closest with, and remember, the Rebbe was basically autodidactic. He studied with his father. He grew up World War I, grew up under the communists, studied with his father. The man he was closest to intellectually was the Ragged Shabbagon, Rabbi Yosef Rosen of Tivinsk. Now, by the way, his years, 1858, 1936. Now, the Ragged Shabbagon, let's say a few words about him, and Miller develops a very interesting thesis here, and I'm captivated by it. You see, the Ragged Shabbagon, no one but no one equaled his knowledge. I write in the Silva era, when Reb Lezer Silva came back during World War I or before World War I. He got stuck in Europe during World War I. You read about it, it's very fascinating. So Reb Lezer Silva went to visit the Gedolim of Europe. And he went to visit Reb Meir Simcha, who he knew from his earlier years, had actually studied with him, questioned him, got guidance from him. Reb Meir Simcha was a Gaon Adir. We're talking about the Meshech Chachma, We're talking about the Yar Sameach. And Reb Meir Simcha told him, "No, if you're here already in the Vince, go in and visit my colleague." Reb Meir Simcha was the Rav of the Litvisha community, the Mitnagdim, and Reb Yosef Rosen was the Rav of the Chassidic community in Dvinsk. So he went in to visit the Rakat Sheva. And when he came out, Reb Meir Simcha said to him, "What's your impression?" He said, "Wow, he has a fantastic memory." And Reb Meir Simcha said, "You don't know what you're talking about. He has no memory whatsoever. What you saw is that Kol HaTorah Kula is Munach Lefanov B'Kuvsa. It's like it's right in front of him. He doesn't have to recall anything. He knows it all." The depth of the Ragah Shava's knowledge was unbelievable. And Miller makes the analogy. He says, yes, there were very innovative thinkers, Lo Alman Yisrael. He says, more than anyone, when anyone will ask you who was the most innovative thinker in the last two centuries, you'll say Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. All of you who've learned in a Litvishi yeshiva, and even beyond a Litvishi yeshiva today, all of you know that Reb Chaim's approach, the Brisker approach, how do we analyze a Rambam? Many yeshiva have adopted, even in the Chesda yeshiva today, they give credit to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein that he broadened the base of learning. All right, you think Reb Chaim was incisive? Yeah, he was incisive right on the spot. Tells also had a Tel Jederich. They were a little broader than Reb Chaim, but it was right on what you were learning. What was amazing about the Rakat Sheva, that he saw connections, Kol HaTorah Kula. And that's why when you look at his writings, he would take a question and va'ayin, and give you 100 different sources. And I've seen it, you can see with your own eyes. And you have to figure out, what is the connection? What is he talking about? His mind was light years ahead of anybody else. Now, I have to add, in all fairness, that ultimately this works against the Rakat Sheva. Does anyone know what I'm saying? Because his mind was so insightful, so invasive, so different, the average Talmud Chacham couldn't comprehend them. And ultimately, and I expressed this and displayed it in the Sunday class over the decades, ultimately, we don't paskin like the Rakat Sheva. Because lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet. He was like an angel. We can't achieve that level. He would come up, I mean, for the sake of argument, that civil marriage, you don't need a get, but you need to get shichrua. It's a famous... There's things like that. And he can prove it with 1,000 proofs. But ordinary mortals, Reb Yitzchok Chanan, Reb Meir Simcha, ordinary mortals, Reb Simcha Zelig Rieger, they couldn't live with that depth of level of understanding. Halacha works in a mortal fashion. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet. So, Chaim Miller makes the point that the Lubavitcher Rebbe found a kindred spirit in the Rakat Sheva. That's why they could correspond on a regular basis. When Reb Menachem Mendel began, he was only 17 years old, where they find the first letter from him to the Rakat Sheva. Later they find very important letters from the Rakat Sheva to him in answering his questions. And Reb Menachem Mendel had a mind that could have been a second Rakat Sheva. It's a very interesting point. He not only knew Kol HaTorah Kula HaNigla VeHanista backwards and forwards, but the Reb Menachem Mendel Schneerson had an insight, had a depth. You see it in his Perish on Rashi, what they take out of his Shayurim that he gave on Rashi. you see what they come out with is chidushim on the Rambam with his insights, and the Chaim Miller leaves you with the thought, imagine had the Rebbe devoted himself full time just to learning, how his mind would have developed. And this will also explain to you, and we spoke about this a year ago perhaps, that there's a tradition in Chabad that Reb Menachem Mendel received smicha from the Rocket Shafa. We have never been able to prove that tradition. No one has ever found a smicha from the Rocket Shafa. But the fact that that tradition exists is a fallout of the voluminous correspondence between the young Menachem Mendel Schneerson and the Rocket Shafa Gaon. And I can tell you, I had a Rebbe, it's my only Rebbe still alive, Laricha German Tovin. Maybe some of you know him or know the name, Rabbi Yosef Weiss. So I remember Rabbi Yosef Weiss got smicha from the yeshiva in 1940. So you can make the cheshbon how old he is. He was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik. He came to YU from Teira Vadas. He came from a Satmar background, a Chassidish background. I believe his grandparents were Satmar Chassidim. I know that Rabbi Yosef Weiss used to go to the Satmar Rebbe Hoshana Rabbah for the Hakafat. And he was married to the granddaughter Rav Shimshra Fall Hirsch. I believe it was a great granddaughter. And Rabbi Yosef Weiss, I remember he once showed me his most precious possession, a postcard from the Rocket Shafa, answering a question he wrote. And that postcard, va'ayin, 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 look here, I'm looking, I'm looking, I'm looking, this source, look that source. You have to spend seven good years going through that postcard to try to understand it. And even then, you can't be positive. What was the thought process of the Rocket Shafa Gaon? So that's one point that Miller makes. But there's a second point, and I think Miller alludes to it, and I believe this gives you insight into the Rebbe beyond everything we've said until now. Remember, I can never forget. Here I am in Melbourne, Shabbos morning. I've often told my grandchildren, and they still ask me, they still can't totally comprehend it. And I davened early, I spoke, gave a shiur, whatever, and I'm now free, and I want to see the community Shabbos morning, because the Torah community is basically in one major area. The area is so filled with Torah Jews that all week long when you want to cross the streets, you have to press the button for the light to change. And Erev Shabbos, the Melbourne police change it into an automatic system, Shabbos and Yontif, so that Jews can cross the streets without having to press any buttons. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. I think it's called Caulfield, if I'm not mistaken. You can correct me. So they take me on a tour, and I see the Lakewood. It's everything is there, Lakewood, Gare, but very, very minor, very minor. Melbourne is owned, and same thing with Sydney. It's owned by Chabad and Mizrahi, but they're representatives of all the types of Torah Judaism throughout the world. Now we come to this big shul and we see a number of people walking out, tall, good-looking people, with the men with big beards. And my host walking us tells us that these people are not Jewish. I say, what? Why are they coming out of shul? He says, you can talk with them, you'll find out. So we go over Shabbat Shalom, Good Shabbos, and we start to talk. We are Hasidim of the Rebbe. We have signed to observe the seven Noharic, as they pronounce it, commandments. They can't say a chet, it's a hey. The Noadites, call them what you wish. Wow. And the Rebbe's outreach. And you know, just now, Chabad in Israel just published hundreds of thousands of pamphlets in Arabic. that they're giving out all over where the Arabs live in Eretz Yisrael, pleading with them to become Shomrei Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Now, yes, on a theological level you can understand if the Rebbe says we have to make a Dirah B'tachtonim for the Ribbono Shel Olam, then it's not enough just to have Jews. You have to have Jews and you have to have Gentiles as well. God is God of every human being. God is God of the entire world. You can't just have isolation from Jews. Of course, I'm positive the Rebbe would agree. Aniye Ircha Kodem. Those of you who know what's going on in Israel, that expression has been very, very big in the news the last week or so. You know what I'm talking about, right? Aniye Ircha Kodem. Doctors on a battleground, they come, the Mechablim just did a stab Jews. Who do you treat first? The Jew who is lightly injured or the Mechabel who was, Baruch Hashem, shot and brought down to the ground and he threw his knife away by a passerby? Who do you treat first? So the medical ethics doctors came out and said, you treat the Mechabel first. There's been a tremendous outcry that it's Aniye Ircha Kodem. This man is a killer. He wanted to kill others. Why should he be treated first? The other people are innocent victims. I hope that thinking wins out. Tremendous battle going on. It's unbelievable what leftists can think, how perverted their minds can be. But Aniye Ircha Kodem. So like I say, people ask me, you hear Chovevei Torah, Tikkun Olam, do you believe in it? I was asked. Of course I believe in it. I say it every day in davening, three times a day. L'takein Olam b'malchut Tadai. Right or wrong, new Yomo, you say it or you don't say it. Of course you say it. But Aniye Ircha Kodem, first I have to get every Jew to be a Shomer Shabbos. Then I'll go to get every non-Jew to be a Shomer Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Now, and the Rebbe begins, and he was mocked, you know, he was laughed at. The anti-Chabotnikim are always looking to jump on anything the Rebbe said. I remember, what's wrong with it? It's not saying in place of outreach to Jews, but I'll never forget those individuals, cool, Australians, good-looking, you know, they are self-sustaining, they're down under, they don't want to import, we're going to do everything here, long beard. We are Hasidim. Then you have clippage, video clippage of the Rebbe giving out dollars. And you see Texas oilmen standing next to the Rebbe like I would stand next to Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, shaking and shivering. Rebbe, we are your Hasidim. Unbelievable. How did it come about? Wait till what I begin next week's class with Yitzchak, and you will see Miller's theory, which is Rakefet's theory, and I think we're right. To reiterate, on this beautiful Monday morning, where we're sitting here so calmly and learning and opening our eyes, we have to be thankful that Tzva Hagana Yisrael, you have no idea what's going on up north and the dangers and down south and what we did in Lebanon. It's beyond comprehension. Ashreinu Shezachinu, a nation that was persecuted, downtrodden. Look at the Gemara in Yevamot, what we tell a prospective ger, are you crazy to become part of our people? Who are we? Dechuyim, dechusin. Take a look what we've suffered. And I heard an ex-Mossadnik interviewed on the radio about the missile that killed that murderer. And he said, I can't talk too much, but I can only say, in this type of technology, directing a missile into a window from Chveis, tens and tens of kilometers away, Israel is the leader in the world in this technology. So Ashreinu Shezachinu, and we have to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for enabling us, with all our difficulty, to achieve what we have in Tzva Hagana Yisrael. And maybe my answer to Rav David Lifshitz was not entirely wrong. So what did we do today? We continued with Shluchim, the Rebbe, the concept, the outreach. I think the most important sentence of the shir was what I said towards the end, that years ago we reached out to Pshutim, Pashut the Yidden. Today the Rebbe said we have to reach out to Jews who know absolutely nothing about Yiddishkeit. And I think of my own family. We're in America 120 years approximately. And I think of my cousins and all that came out of the family. And I just pray that somehow Chabotnikim should get hold of them and outreach to them. It is so sad, the spiritual Holocaust in the Western world. We had in class yesterday, I didn't want to mention his last name, but we had Jay Gottesman, who's a grandson of Reb Mendel Gottesman, one of the men who built the yeshiva. And you think back to the three people we spoke about 2-3 years ago who gave Rabbi Revel the money that enabled the yeshiva, the campus, to be built and move uptown to Washington Heights. And you speak about Lampert, Gottesman, Fischel, each one giving $200,000 in the mid-20s. And where are their descendants today? Okay? And at least we were Zeicha that take a look at Jay Gottesman, his family. I met his grandson, David Gottesman. His granddaughter is married to the brother of someone sitting right in this classroom and looking me right in the eye at this moment. And what a schut to have survived the spiritual desolation of the Western world. The other two have, of course. Well, Lampert I've yet to come across, but in Fischel I've taught. What are you talking about? Rabbi Goldstein, his son-in-law? Every last descendant of Rabbi Goldstein is Shom Torah Umitzvah. Every last descendant. And I've taught some of them right here in this kollel. Okay. Now, we have the point about the Rebbe and the Rocket Rebbe is of interest, but the Rebbe got involved in being Rebbe. The Rav got involved in being the Rav. Rav Hirsch got involved in being the man who changed German Orthodoxy, turning German Orthodoxy outward.
So I don't think... very important because there are many, many scholars who have to make a decision.
Right.
To be a communal leader or communal rabbi or to be a Gola B'Torah.
Right, right.
And the truth about it is though, those who are Gola B'Torah and Yeshiva, they can't be a communal leader because they don't understand the spirit of the time. They don't understand people.
I don't necessarily think that's true.
Well, listen, let me put it this way. The Rav was zeicher to be both a Rosh Yeshiva, a Gaon Adia, and he understood the spirit of the times. The Rebbe as well. But my point is that they didn't achieve, in other words, Noah Rosenblum criticizes, he's correct, but is he fair? You understand? But look, it's food for thought. I told you, in my own life, I could have solved many problems and accepted big titles, but I wouldn't be able to give the classes that I'm giving here. Okay? Next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up exactly where we left off, and you will enjoy. It's unbelievable. After the introduction that I gave yesterday, the shiur will flow, and you'll see an amazing head-on meeting between the world of religious Zionism and the world of Reb Menashe Klein, and Rav Henkin is brought in, Flatbush Yeshiva is brought in, and Moreno Rabbeinu Rav Soloveitchik is brought in. Now, I have a number of freebies. First of all, here's an article of a few years ago by Michael Breuder, Professor Breuder, and Professor Shlomo Brody. Well, he teaches at Yeshiva HaKotel. It's on Orthodox women rabbis. Tentative thoughts that distinguish between the timely and the timeless. It's a fascinating article. If anyone wants to see it, pass it on after you finish. This article is in flux. This is about 5 years old. I understand that YU is coming out with something now about women rabbis in print, so it'll be interesting to see. This I told you about yesterday, Kovet Speit Aron Yisrael. It's published by the Yeshivat of Stalin Kalin. And this is a very interesting, it has a long article on opening up bottles on Shabbos, opening up cans. It's very fascinating what's being revisited here. Now we come in to Chabad. This is the case of the missing tape and the Rebbe's rediscovered Fabrengen. It's an amazing story here, how they were missing a tape from Fabrengen back in the early 80s, and no one knew where that tape was, and someone had recorded it, who later moves to Brooklyn, and believe it or not, they're able to find the tape, and now they're putting in heavy money to enhance it, but we will have a new Fabrengen on tape. This is about Truman and his decision to recognize the State of Israel. Very, very moving. When you read this, bear in mind, they say his wife was anti-Semitic and wouldn't allow a Jew into the house. I don't know how true that is, but that's what's said. This is something that's in the news right now, a meeting of Gedolei Yisrael, and in it they express their opposition to women getting any academic degree. And if you know what's going on, that has been in the news black and white. Judaism, the RCA's response to movements altering halachic practices and values, by Rabbi Professor Dov Fisher. We had a Dov Fisher right here in the Kollel, but this is someone else. Interesting article from my camp. This article, not from my camp. 21 Kislev. Who saved the Satmar Rebbe? And that's the old question. Do you give credit to the Jewish agency, or do you listen to the Satmar Rebbe story? Here's Chabad's interviews, three different interviews, including one by a YU Musmach Dachdach, the Mordechai Reich, who did not listen to the Rebbe. Mordechai Reich lives in Efrat, I know him, and he was quite friendly with many of my students. He's a YU grad, and I give Chabad credit that they even publish interviews of people who did not listen to the Rebbe. Here's what I spoke about, historic Fabrengen held in Russia, and it's unbelievable what Chabad is able to do right out on the open, right in the heart of Moscow, all the places we visited. Who would ever dream that Rabbi Beryl Lazar, with another few thousand Hasidim, can hold the Yutchet Kislev Fabrengen and get greetings from all the leaders from Putin down of the Soviet Union. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, and just remember, round one went to the Rebbe. Round two went to Yomo. Round three went to the Rebbe. Yomo, we're waiting to see how you handle round four. Believe me, I enjoy a student who can slug the Rebbe and win a round. Oh, do I enjoy it. Now the ball is in your court. And let me tell you what's going on with our government and our high-level officials. If anyone ever complains about the high rate of taxes here, you are very foolish. You are seeing a Broadway show before your eyes daily with front seats. Believe me, we are getting our taxpayers' value. It is unbelievable. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Thank you very, very much.